Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the studios of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed, your host. Today's topic, the Eurozone debt crisis. Our guest journalists will give all of us an insider's view of the financial, political, and social dilemma facing the 17 Eurozone countries. The crisis is causing large demonstrations across the continent. It's threatening to damage the fragile global economy and literally tear apart the European Union. Ireland, Portugal, and Italy are in deep financial trouble. Earlier this week, Spain had its debt rating dropped. France received a debt warning. And there are doubts that European leaders meeting this weekend will agree on a plan to stop the debt spiral. But at the forefront of this struggle is Greece, still broke after two Eurozone bailouts and seeking another loan package. More than 100,000 people took to the streets of Athens yesterday, and nearly that many today, during a 48-hour general strike. The anti-austerity demonstrations that turned violent on Wednesday, when rogue protesters tossed Molotov cocktails at riot police. The view of the ancient Acropolis was obscured by smoke, and inside the Parliament building, despite the huge demonstrations outside, lawmakers were expected again today to vote for another round of tax hikes, wage cuts, and government layoffs desperately needed to demonstrate the country as creditworthy and to avoid default. Global Journalist spoke with Reuters correspondent Yanis Varoukas in Athens before the 48-hour general strike began. Varoukas told us the demonstrations have been getting progressively more intense.
We saw it happening before last summer. We had huge demonstrations. It was like a battlefield in front of the parliament, which is, again, you know, metaphorically, is very sad because you have the parliament, the temple of democracy, and, you know, all around it is fires and tear gas. People cannot go anywhere. It's like, it's very sad. I've never seen Greece and Greeks in such a terrible situation. And I always thought, you know, I would never want to cover a big, big story or a catastrophe or a war in Greece. And now we are in state of war, basically. What happens here is a war, a different kind of war, but very ruthless.
Now, Nick, you've been reporting from Athens since 2004. Would you agree with that conclusion? And could you tell us about these demonstrations and put them in perspective for us?
Yes, the demonstrations have certainly been intense. We've had over the last couple of days, and certainly there were a few over the summer, particularly in June and July, that were turned very violent. But rather than focus on just the clashes between what effectively is a small group of rioters and the police, I would term them professional rioters. I would look at the bigger picture and see that the number of people participating in these protests, which are essentially against the austerity measures and the way that the government, the Eurozone and the IMF are handling this crisis, has steadily grown. As you mentioned, probably close to 200,000 people yesterday. The attendance was a bit lower today, but nevertheless, these have been termed as probably the biggest protest since the fall of the military dictatorship in 1974. So they're very significant events, and they display the growing anger that people are feeling at the way that this crisis is being managed.
Now, that's speaking is Nick Malkoutsis, the deputy editor of Kathimerini, Greece's only English-language daily newspaper. Also joining us today to give us insight about the Eurozone crisis is Clark Boyd, correspondent for PRI's The World. Could you put this in perspective, Clark? You've been also working on this story for quite a long time.
Yeah, I've been based here in Brussels. I've been kind of following the larger policy implications of what the Eurozone leaders have been trying to do, working with Greece to try to find some way to keep Greece from defaulting, to keep them from leaving the Eurozone. Last week, I was actually in Athens doing a number of different reports. So I've kind of seen it from afar and up close now.
So both Clark and Nick, could you tell us maybe some personal encounters you've had with the people of Greece that illustrate how they're feeling right now?
Well, if I can give an example, one of the stereotypes, or a number of stereotypes, have built up about Greeks and the root causes of this crisis, as far as Greece is concerned, at least, in terms of Greeks being lazy, in terms of all Greeks evading their taxes, too many people in the public sector retiring in their mid-50s, and so on. And I think what's happened over the last few months has been that a lot of these stereotypes have been reversed, and people are understanding that the problem is much deeper, and that the stereotypes are just that. They're stereotypes. They're not a representation of what's actually going on in Greece. And to give you an example, one of our neighbours works in one of Greece's top ministries. She's an administrative official, a job that until now would have been very much sought after. The latest round of austerity measures means that her wage is effectively going to be halved, and that means that she will be left with only a couple of hundred euros spending money after paying her mortgage, and she simply can't afford to pay that. I mean, I bumped into her in the street the other day, and she's really anxious about what's going to happen. She's started going to one bank after the other to discuss refinancing her mortgage, because she'll simply lose her house. Either that, or she has to learn to live on 200 euros a month, which is impossible in Greece, where living costs are pretty much as high as they are in other parts of Europe, or as high as they are in Brussels, where Clark is. So that's the kind of situation people are faced with at the moment.
Clark, are you also seeing that desperation?
Yeah, I would just echo exactly what the kinds of things that Nick was talking about. In my conversations with people last week, there was this feeling of first of all of hopelessness, that they're being that these austerity measures are affecting private and public sector folks alike. Their incomes are being squeezed, their taxes are being raised, and at the same time, you know, prices on everything are going up, especially things like gasoline. I talked to one gentleman who is kind of working part-time as a salesman, and he said that he said leaving in his car in the morning, he's already spent more money than he would possibly make in a sale. So just driving around and paying for gasoline, he's already losing money. And he and his wife were telling me that they haven't bought any new clothes for a year and a half. They have cut their supermarket bill, you know, by a third. Basically, this sense that they're even scared to leave their homes for fear that they're going to spend money. And you can kind of start to see and start to get a sense that people have been knocked out of the normal rhythm of life. And you can kind of see why psychological problems are on the rise there. People, there is this real sense of hopelessness. It was pretty striking to hear about.
I wanted to read this quote that one of Yanis's colleagues at Reuters wrote today. A member of the ruling party in Greece said she was struggling struggling today to decide how to vote, and she said she was going to go ahead and vote again for the austerity measure. And she received applause in parliament when she said, quote, "Enough is enough. This country is collapsing. Is it really that bad? Are we, particularly with this new round of cuts, what's going to happen?"
Yeah, that's certainly the feeling here, because to put this in perspective, Greece has not only entered the second year of an austerity program unlike any other undertaken by a European country for the last few decades, it's also about to complete its third full year of recession. Now, I was reading something about the Great Depression the other day, and that was generally accepted as being 12 quarters of negative growth. Well, if, as expected, Greece completes this year with another quarter of negative growth, that will be 13 consecutive quarters of negative growth. So you've got two very, very dangerous situations. You've got on one side an economy that is collapsing, and on the other side an austerity program that is squeezing every last cent out of people who are still lucky enough to be in jobs and to have some kind of income. And that's, I think, why people are feeling that this is leading down a very dark tunnel, and they can't see the light at the end of it.
Nick, could you take us in the streets today? What was it like today, and what was it like yesterday? What aspect of these demonstrations struck you?
I think the interesting aspect of the demonstration is that there's one thing that unites people and a lot of things that divides them in Greece. And one thing that unites them is that they're all unhappy, anxious, angry about the current situation. They see it as a failure of Greece's political system over the years. They see it as a mismanagement of the economy. They see it as a tiny proportion of the population having profited wildly over the last few decades at the expense of the others. And they also see it as perhaps an abdication of responsibility on the part of the Eurozone. But what divides them is that no one really has a convincing or comprehensive response to the current situation, be that here within Greece or at the EU level. And what this means is that we see a complete fragmentation of the political system here in Greece. The ruling party has seen its support halve over the last 2 years. The main opposition party, New Democracy, which opposes the current measures to a large extent, has seen its support fall since its lowest ever polling, which was at the previous elections. The smaller parties have gained a bit, but there is a complete sort of political vacuum forming in Greece. And it's pretty much a given that the current government is not going to survive its full four-year term. But no one knows really what comes after that. The parties can't work within themselves. There's no history of coalition politics in Greece, and certainly at the moment they're talking across each other. So no one really knows what the next step is, and that's just adding to the whole feeling of uncertainty at the moment.
Clark, could you comment on that and also talk about what you've been seeing in Greece and whether you think that Greece is destined to default?
Well, I mean, certainly a lot of the interviews that I did, particularly with Greek economists and union leaders and also just people on the street, would echo what Nick said as far as this sense that there's this complete power vacuum within the Greek government, that there is no leadership there. In fact, one economist I talked to characterized Greece as a plane without any pilot, and you're unable to even take control of it at all and do anything with it. So, you know, it's pretty much that Greece is in this complete free fall right now. I'd say most of the people over the past 6 months, I would ask economists, so do you think Greece is going to default? And, you know, it would start out with, no, I don't think it will. I think that the Eurozone will find a way to save them. But now as the months drag on, and I think that there's definitely a sense that if there's a lack of leadership in Greece, there's also a lack of coherent leadership at the Eurozone and the European Union level, that's not going to happen, and that Greece's only option may be to default. Now, it may not end up being called a default. It may be called a restructuring, where they, you know, or a controlled default where they bring down some of their debt. But you know, many economists that I talk to see that as kind of the only way forward for Greece at this time.
Well, now, just before we continue our discussion and open it up into the entire Eurozone, I want to remind our audience that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You also can find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to today's program on our website. And send us questions or comments via globaljournalistprogram@gmail.com or on our Facebook page. Now, the management of the euro has always been an uncomfortable compromise between varying and often competing national interests. Now, with this recession, it's now we have a lot of self-interests that are getting in the way of solving this problem. And that's the self-interests in some ways are trumping the national interests. And basically, what do you see from a wider perspective, the impact of this crisis?
Either well, I mean, from my perspective here in Brussels, the thing that I've noticed most is I alluded to it before, is this lack of leadership at the European level in dealing with this. And part of this is structural. The Eurozone was created. There was a lot of, you know, political will behind it. But a lot of economists are saying now that there wasn't much thought about, well, what happens if there's an economic crisis? What happens if, what happens if we have a situation like one country like Greece could suddenly lead to this domino effect happening? And, I think that there's a lot of struggling about how to deal with that, certainly here in Brussels. And as you said, that is, you know, what's playing into that is that all of these politicians, it's still, the Eurozone is still 17 different countries with, you know, widely differing levels of economic development, really. And they're, you know, these politicians, they have to play to their home audiences as well to stay in power. So you're seeing, you know, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, she's walking this very fine line between, you know, Germany's the economic powerhouse of Europe. It's expected to bail out Greece to a large extent, and a lot of Germans are saying, why should we have to do that? And so, you know, Chancellor Merkel is kind of stuck in the middle, saying, I want to stay in power. I have to appease my voters, but at the same time, I understand that we have to do this, or we have to bail out Greece, or you know, the consequences could be staggering if Italy and Spain and Portugal and Ireland then go in succession.
Nico, you want to add anything to that?
Just to add to that from a Greek perspective, what you hear a lot of people here say is that on the one hand, Greece is continuously put down and chased after by the Eurozone core countries, certainly Germany, countries like Finland, like the Netherlands, and it's made out to be perhaps, you know, the biggest threat to the Eurozone, whereas people here look at what's going in other countries, and certainly what's going on with European banks. And underneath all this lies the issue of, you know, the recapitalization of European banks. And for many people, that's the key issue. And this kind of a feeling that there's a bit of a hypocrisy among the European Union leaders about how they're doing this, and that if they really want a European Union and a single currency, then there has to be much more give and take between the countries and much more understanding that you can't expect countries like Greece, like Portugal, perhaps like Ireland, to function in the same way that countries like Germany or the Netherlands do. And there's a danger in that it creates this insularism within the European Union, which can only lead in one direction, which is the breakup, which at the moment no one really seems to want, but no one is really fighting against either.
Yeah, the breakup is sort of the conversation that really hasn't gone very far, that what the consequences of that would be. I remember when I was working for Radio Free Europe in 2004, on May 1st, they had the country celebrated joining the EU, and I was on top of a apartment building overlooking where the street where they had their Velvet Revolution protest marches, and fireworks were going off. It was everybody in the entire city of Prague was partying. And one of the people I was standing next to said, a Czech woman said that it was like Christmas and Liberation Day all rolled into one. The Czechs just revered the idea of finally getting protection, getting in the EU, and now this prospect of the EU breaking apart. What does it mean to the people in these countries?
Again, looking at it from a perspective here in Athens, despite the troubles of the last 2 years, and despite the fact that a lot of that is attached to Greece's membership of the Eurozone and the way that other Eurozone countries have reacted to the crisis, the majority of people, two-thirds actually, according to a recent poll, want to remain in the Euro and see Greece's future in the European Union. And I think that's probably a strong feeling in a lot of countries. And I guess the way you have to look at it is that the European Union is an unfinished project. And it's in terms of the bigger picture, it's a young child. It's not yet fully mature, let alone the Euro. And if you're going to abandon it at the first sign of serious problems, then it doesn't really say much for the principles that led to its foundation and how those have survived over the years. I think by all means, there is domestic concerns that have to be addressed by Merkel, by Sarkozy, and by all the leaders in the European Union, but ultimately the project began as something to bring Europe closer together, not just economically, but politically and socially. And you can't just run away at the first sign of a problem. This is a problem that can be addressed, and this is the frustrating thing that people see here, is that there are tools there to address the situation, to address the economic crisis, and to try and learn from what's gone wrong over the last few years. But there's such a lack of leadership, a lack of initiative, a lack of foresight within the European Union at the moment that it doesn't bode well.
Clark, have you talked to people about their personal opinions about the potential breakup of the Eurozone?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the feeling here in Brussels is generally that a breakup is to be avoided at all costs, and I think that a lot of the reasoning behind that is maybe for better or worse, not a lot of economic reasoning, but a lot of political reasoning. In other words, there was a lot of political will that went into the creation of the Eurozone. And there are, obviously a lot of things on the line should something like that fall apart. One person that I interviewed in Greece had put it in an interesting way, and what Nick was saying made me think of it. He said that this is really a crash test for the Eurozone and even more broadly, I think, for the European Union, in general. You've got the Eurozone of 17 countries, the European Union 27, and in many ways it's all still very tribal. It's these people still have domestic audiences to play for, and they're trying to balance that against buying into this sort of pan-European idea, which looks very nice on paper, but then when something like this crisis comes along, and you see how it's not designed to move quickly enough to deal with it, some would say not move at all, then you see some of the underlying weaknesses of it. Like Nick said, I think there's this feeling that, where's the leadership here? Who's going to step up and say, this is what needs to be done, and this is why it needs to be done, and this is why we need to save the Eurozone and the European Union?
For people that are outside Europe, they may be saying, well, what does that mean for us? What do you see as the global impact of what's going to happen in the Eurozone financially?
Well, I think it's unclear at this point. Well, obviously, the United States is incredibly concerned about what's going on. President Obama has made it a point to say that, you know, Europe needs to get its house in order and needs to get its house in order quickly. Tim Geithner has been over here telling European leaders, please, please, we are affected by this too. And in fact, there was this hint that, you know, Europe and Europe dealing with its problems or not dealing with it could make the difference between the United States slipping back into recession or not.
Okay.
So in that sense, I think certainly the United States economy will have an impact should, okay, you know, Greece default and then this cascade of other countries that could default. It's unclear at this point how, you know, deeply American banks are invested in Greece. There's concern over the American banks being very heavily invested in Italy, for example. So should Italy have trouble like Greece, then you could see serious problems at American banks as well. So okay, I definitely think what's going on here has a big impact.
Okay, Clark, we're just about out of time. So I want to thank our guests, Nick Malkoutsis from Athens and Clark Boyd from Brussels. Our director is Joe Deutschman, audio by Pat Akers. Our executive producer is Raymond Tungekar. The lead producer for this show was Ryan Kreese, assisted by David Cawthorn. And now, stay tuned. Free Press Watch comes along next.
And now, Global Journalist Free Press Watch, where each week we bring you a roundup of major events in press freedom from around the world. I'm Jessica Popovec. This week's report comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists. The deteriorating state of press freedoms in Macedonia just might serve to keep that country out of the European Union. An EU Commission report issued last week denounced what it called, quote, intimidation of journalists and selective enforcement of legislation against media companies, end quote. Macedonian organizations that support a free press are hoping that the external pressure might help improve conditions in that country. And free press advocacy groups are denouncing a fine levied by the Venezuelan government on one of that nation's most critical TV networks. Globovisión has been fined approximately $2 million U.S. dollars for its coverage of deadly prison riots that took place over the summer. According to the Venezuelan National Telecommunications Commission, or CONATEL, the station violated the law on social responsibility by allegedly stirring public anxiety. The commission is charging Globovisión with falsely claiming that members of the National Guard massacred prisoners and also failing to convey the government's point of view in a timely manner. And in Egypt last week, security forces stormed a U.S. government-funded television station. Al-Hara was live on the air at the time and was covering clashes just outside the building. The clashes left dozens dead, including a cameraman for a rival news station. During the raid, the station continued to broadcast. Video of the incident is online at cpj.org. As always, you can find links to these and other stories on our website at www.globaljournalist.org. On behalf of everyone here at Global Journalist Radio, thank you for joining us.